This morning, we're privileged to welcome to our service and to our pulpit Rabbi Elizabeth Dunsker. Rabbi Dunsker is Associate Rabbi of Congregation Beth Israel here in Austin. She grew up in Rochester, New York, and attended Simmons College in Boston, as well as Tel Aviv University. She attended rabbinical school at Hebrew Union College, Jewish Institute of Religion, in Jerusalem and New York City. She received a Master of Arts in Hebrew Literature, as well as ordination as a rabbi. Besides serving her congregation, she sits on the board of the Mother's Milk Bank of Austin, the Texas Faith Network, and the Ethics Committee of Hospice Austin. And she says that she has been happily married to her computer genius husband, Jeff, since January of 2000. And what I discovered in the first service is that Rabbi Dunsker and I share the pleasure of having met our husbands in services. So we can't promise you that you will meet a life partner here, but I'm sure you will have wonderful fellowship in whatever form. So welcome, Rabbi Dunsker, and I know you will enjoy the sermon that she has for us this morning. Come into this place of peace and let its silence heal your spirit. Come into this place of memory and let its history warm your soul. Come into this place of prophecy and power and let its vision change your heart. Now, in the center of our service, we pause to center ourselves. With the rush, stress, joy, and sadness of the holidays behind us, and facing a year filled with promise, but also with uncertainty and the rumblings of war, let us focus our special memories or feelings by lighting a candle or simply sitting quietly in the pews. Let us pray. For the sun and the dawn, which we did not create, for the moon and the evening, which we did not make, for food which we plant but cannot grow, for friends and loved ones we have not earned and cannot buy, for this gathered company which welcomes us as we are from wherever we have come, for all our free churches that keep us human and encourage us in our quest for beauty, truth, and love, for all things which come to us as gifts of being from sources beyond ourselves, gifts of life and love and friendship, we lift up our hearts in thanks this day. Amen.
So a little while ago, you heard a story from Isaac Bashevis Singer, who is one of the great Jewish storytellers, and his stories are a particular kind of Jewish story. They are often stories of goats. Goats are prevalent in those stories, but also stories about peasantry and what it was like living in a small little village. I'm going to tell you today about a different kind of Jewish story, which is a little bit more of a ghost story. This is our favorite, most famous ghost story. But as well, it's a story of survival, which is the other kind of Jewish story that we tell. I grew up with a librarian father who loved science fiction. In fifth grade, when he handed me first The Hobbit and then the Lord of the Rings trilogy, not only was I hooked, but I was also confused. The character Gollum in these books was nothing at all like the golem of Jewish lore. As I understand it, Tolkien named his golem for the sound that he made in his throat. Whereas in Hebrew, the word golem is used to describe something wrapped together or some mass which is not quite fully formed. I assume most of you know about the Tolkien golem, but for those few of you who may be hiding from pop culture, Gollum is a creepy, slithery creature. At one time, he had been a hobbit, which is a short, big-footed, happy-go-lucky being. But Gollum had the chance to own a very powerful ring which controls all power, and he had to kill in order to get it. He spent many years hiding in dark places with the ring, and it turned him into something soulless. In the latest movie, we watch Gollum try to turn back into a happy, trusting being. He struggles with the two sides of himself, and for a time he accomplishes this. He protects and leads two other hobbits on their journey, but when he feels that his trust has been betrayed, he turns back into something evil, all the while pretending to still be protecting them. The Jewish golem is a different being entirely. There are many ancient stories of different rabbis creating golems when times have been particularly difficult for their Jewish communities. The main job of the golem is to protect, but unfortunately, once that job is done, the golem will always get into trouble. The most famous golem story comes from Prague, Czechoslovakia. This myth is unusual in that it is supposed to have happened in a specific year, in 1580. There was a new danger brewing in Prague. A notorious priest, Tadeusz, planned to accuse the Jews of a new ritual murder. Rabbi Lo heard about it and, to avert the horrible danger, directed a dream question to heaven to help him save his people. He received his answer in an order that came in alphabetically in Hebrew. Ata bara golem devuk hachomer v'tigzar zedim chevel torfei Yisrael. The simple meaning was, make a golem of clay and you will destroy the entire Jew baiting company. But this was only part of the message. The inner meaning had to also be understood to be effective. Rabbi Lo extracted the real message by using something called zerufim, special Kabbalistic or mystical formulas. And when he was done, he knew he could accomplish the creation of the golem. He called two people to assist him, his son-in-law, a Kohen, a Jew descended from the ancient priestly order, and his pupil, a Levite, a Jew descended from the temple servants. He explained that they needed four elements, fire, water, air, and earth. The two assistants represented the fire and the water, Rabbi Lo, the air, and the golem, of course, the earth. He explained how they had to purify themselves because unless they were completely ready, the Shem HaMeforash, God's secret holy name, would destroy them. After a day of purification, they read various chapters from a particularly holy book, Sefer Yetzirah, the Book of Creation, and then went to the River Moldau. By torchlight, they sculpted a giant body. Some stories claim the body was made out of river clay, but others claim the body was made out of dirt from the cemetery. But either way, they molded this figure. And on his forehead, they carved three Hebrew letters, Aleph, Mem, and Tav, which spell the Hebrew word Emet, which means truth. The Kohen walked 7 times around the body from right to left, reciting special Zerufim. The clay turned bright red like fire. Then the Levite walked around another 7 times from the body, from left to right, reciting some more Zerufim. The fire-like redness disappeared and water flowed through the body. He grew hair and nails. Then Rabbi Lo walked once around the body and placed a piece of parchment in his mouth on which was written Shem HaMeforash, God's most secret and most powerful name. He bowed to the east, west, south, and north, and all three of them recited together. And he breathed into his nostrils the breath of life, and man became a living soul. The golem opened his eyes and looked at his creator. They dressed him and took him to the synagogue where he could get ready to start his mission. Every night before going to bed, Rabbi Lo would put a piece of paper in the golem's mouth with a list of things for him to do during the night. He would patrol the streets, making sure the Jews stayed safe and no one tried to attack them. He chopped wood, drew water, he swept the synagogue. But eventually they started running out of things for the golem to do. But the golem is a being without a soul, without a conscience. His one job was to protect and care for the Jews of Prague. With that job done, he went amok. Eventually, he became a great danger to the Jews, and so Rabbi Lo had the difficult task of ending the life of the golem. To do that, he had to erase the first letter on his forehead, leaving the word mate, or in English, death. This was no easy task. During this time, the golem had been growing. He was a huge giant by now. But Rabbi Lo waited until the morning when he was asleep in the synagogue attic and crept up to him and erased the letter. The clay figure had to stay hidden in the attic of the synagogue, and no one was permitted to enter it again until many years later. Some writers during the 19th century claimed that the outlines of a giant body could still be seen there. When you go to visit Prague, you will find in the Jewish quarter that the golem is big business. There are books and artwork and little clay figures you can buy. This story is such a powerful one that it has woven its way into all kinds of literature. In my personal library, I have at least 4 modern Gollum stories written by different writers. And if you like reading sci-fi, I recommend a book called He, She, and It by Marge Piercy, which has a futuristic society creating a robot/golem, or as well the new book that's come out, a Pulitzer Prize-winning book called The Amazing Adventures of Cavalier and Clay, about an escape artist who leaves Prague with the golem. There's a theory that Mary Shelley even based her story of Frankenstein off of Rabbi Lowe's golem. And a few years ago, even The X-Files did its own version of the story. As a child, therefore, I was confused about Tolkien's golem. By 5th grade, I was very familiar with the story of the golem, as well as many of the alternative versions of the story. So when I read about Gollum in The Hobbit, I couldn't understand how the two were connected. It does seem to me that somewhere along the way I once read something that explained that Tolkien based his character on the Jewish character. And if it's true, here's what I've come up with. Both characters have the potential to do good. Both also have the potential to do great evil. Because neither has a conscience, the one from Prague was born without it, and the one who lives in Middle Earth chose to ignore his and rid himself of it. The odds are better that they will do great evil unless their actions can be directed in some way. There is a difference in the way that these two characters go about doing their work. The Jewish golem is large and lumbering, and he protects in the way that a police uniform does. It shows that there is power and authority here, and you better not mess with it. The Tolkien golem behaves differently. He gains his power through selfishness, through sneaky hiding, and holding on to information. But his actions are ultimately selfish, and it's his own work that leads to his death. The golem of Prague doesn't understand what he's done, and ultimately doesn't understand why he must be unmade. Both of these characters are so well done that they have invaded our psyche. They are both icons in a way because they teach us something valuable about ourselves. We also have the potential for great good and great evil. And in order to determine which path we are walking down, we need to direct our actions as well. We have some guidelines. We have our conscience to help us. We have our religious communities and our national standards. But all of us have the potential to change like Tolkien's Gollum. We can choose to behave well or badly and suffer from our own selfish impulses. And Rabbi Lowe's golem exists to show us that we are not just made of clay. We are not just something partially formed. We have our minds and our souls, and so we should always remember that our potential is much higher than any mere golem. When our good impulses take us down a bad path, we can stop and turn and understand what to do. May we all always remember this. We are not just clay to be molded. We are beings with purpose and with potential to accomplish anything. We were made B'Tselem Elohim, in the image of God, and that requires greatness from us. Keini Hiratzon, may this always be God's will.